Sports Radio 610 presents Area 45 with Bijani and Creighton.
8 o'clock hour. Appreciate you joining us on Area 45. He's Patrick Creighton, Sean Bijani, Chris Santiago producing. Hit us up, 713-572-4610, 572-4610. Coming up next segment, at some point this hour, I'll say that, because we're a little loose on nights where we don't have, Astros and an H-Town post game to get to. But we do have some good audio from a couple of Rockets, Reed Shepard. And then a little bit later on in the program, I'll let you hear some really good stuff from Kevin Durant that is new stuff from the current Rocket, one of the newest members of the Houston Rockets, Kevin Durant.
Y'all know who I am.
Yeah, buddy. We're looking forward to that and discussing as such. We got new audio from John Mechie. He was on Texans All Access this week, and I know this was the first that I'd heard and seen the quote. You know, they had him in like the really nice studio, sitting all nice up in the chair, comfy like. Had some really interesting things to say in regards to Nick Cayley's offense and like what he's learned of it to this point this offseason. You remember, was he 44th overall, second round pick back in 2022 by the Texans? Remember like who coached him offensively his final year at Alabama? Do you happen to remember that, PC? Who is
this person have a butt for a chin?
Possibly, yes. Okay, so you're right on the same page as me. Remember that, all of you, whenever you hear John Mechie, who was asked the question, hey, how are things going with this new offense? Are you picking things up? It's a pivotal training camp for you.
It's good. I relate to it a lot. I like it. It's very similar to an offense I had in with Bill O'Brien at Alabama my last year. And a little bit of that Sark offense too, because of the West Coast. So it's been pretty good for us to adjust to it. It's been pretty easy. It's fun for the receivers. It's our type of offense for sure. It gives a lot of power to the offensive players. Mm-hmm. You know. A lot of trust with the offensive players. So we've been enjoying.
All right. So some interesting stuff there, I think, that you got from John Mechie. You'll expect him to say, yeah, hey, it's going well. But it's really about like the nuts and bolts of the offense, which we've been discussing all offseason. We don't have any idea what this is really going to look like. Nick Cayley's never coordinated an offense. He's never called plays before. But one of the things that I feel like has been kind of a consistent theme is Cayley's going to bring in a little bit of a mixture, right, of a little New England and a little the West Coast, you know, that the Texans had already had in place under Bobby Slowick that stemmed from the Kubiak-Shanahan, tree, so to speak. And that's literally what John Mechie told you there. So I think we have at least a better answer than we've had in terms of like what kind of style of offense to expect from the Houston Texans. Power to the players. I think we already knew that. But when he'd said like it's been pretty easy to like pick up already, it's a lot of fans, I think, freaked out, and maybe media members did too at the time earlier this offseason whenever I forget who dropped it. Was it Cayley? Or somebody else was like, yeah, you know, the language, the verbiage, it's different. You know, we're having to relearn this, that, and the other thing. And everybody was like, oh, my gosh. You know, what kind of change really is this going to be? Is this going to be some difficult things for the Texans to kind of pick up? How many hiccups, are they going to have along the way? That kind of made me feel better just about, like, the offense in general. But this dude, John Mechie, and John McClain kind of echoed it last night again, and it's just flat out the case, in my opinion. This is a pivotal camp for him. It's like make or break, not just for him, but probably Xavier Hutchinson. And you could power rank him if you wanted to. Damian Pierce, I would throw in there. There's probably a couple other guys on the offensive side of the ball that, you look at the tight end room and you could probably have a really clear declaration that, hey, you know, you get either put up or shut up, get out kind of a thing. But this is huge for John Mechie, a former second-round pick by the Texans. If he looks anything close, PC, to the guy that he did the last time that he played football for Alabama, that'd be pretty badass.
It's a big road for John Metchie to have to get across here, because he has not impressed. And you think about it, this is what, year four for him?
Mm-hmm.
This is the like the last year in the contract. He's got to figure out how to make this team, because you already know Collins, Kirk, two kids they drafted in the second and third round from Iowa State. They're making a team. Means you've got one out of two jobs left. And usually wide receiver five, wide receiver six, those guys got to be special teamers. John Metchie is not a special teamer. So Metchie is going to have to outplay one of the rookies to be a top four receiver on this team. Or I think it's going to be very difficult for him to make this team no matter what. And realistically, I think from the Texans, and I get a good camp out of John Metchie, I'm trading him. Because I'm going to go younger. I'm going to go with the kids I just took. I'm going to go with the kids who are not going to have to overcome everything John Metchie has had to overcome just to get to this point 4 years in. So I think if Metchie has a big camp and he flashes and he shows like, hey, you know, I can be a player. I can be a top three guy. I think I'm trying to trade him and get some more draft capital for next year.
I don't think it's the first time you've said that, like that. And that's a, if, you know, he's playing well,
because if he's not playing well, he's just getting cut.
Trading him. Yeah. It's funny because, yeah, you look at the depth chart that, you know, does not include Tank Dell this year. He ain't playing.
He's not playing.
But behind Nico Collins, Christian Kirk, Jaden Higgins, Jalen Knoll, there is a John Metchie, an Xavier Hutchinson, a Justin Watson, a Braxton Berrios, a Johnny Johnson, a Jared Wayne, you know, which the latter have been practice squad fodder, you know, the last couple of 3 years on the Texans. And the well has gone dry a few times, and you've needed a Jared Wayne. You've needed a Johnny Johnson. That might be a John Metchie. Maybe for a guy that is familiar with a system, with an offense, and a place like the Houston Texans, I do think it's going to be a little bit more difficult to cut him than people think. But, and it's not from a sentimental standpoint at all. It's just, I do think they place a value, how much, I don't know, in the fact that there is familiarity there. And in that, maybe they believe Nick Caley and the familiarity with, you know, an offense that he played in his final year at Alabama with Bill O'Brien, and some elements that are maybe carried over from the West Coast style that he's been in literally the last three seasons, some element of it, maybe they unlock him. I don't know what that means, but if he's, you know, pretty close to the guy that you thought you were getting when you drafted him in 2022 from Alabama, like, holy smokes, here's a, you know, a guy that can really, you know, catch almost any ball thrown his way. And, you know, he's got a knack for getting to the end zone. He had 14 touchdowns his last 2 years at Alabama. He was a playmaker, won a national title. Like, people very much knew who this guy was. We were excited to get John Metchie. Like, yeah, you knew the injury thing was there. I forget, what did he have, like a
towards
ACL
the,
right?
It was the semifinals.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say conference championship game, but I couldn't remember. And in, you know, the cancer thing, the whole bit, and it's literally been like a 2 year, you know, journey back just to get into an NFL body. And, you know, then the system, is he a fit, is he not a fit? Like, there's just been a lot going against him that he's had to get through. But if he's ever had an opportunity to really kind of seize the day and, you know, prove something to this organization or to just football people in general, this feels like the year. I like what I'm hearing is all I'm saying, in that if this offense is best suited to get the very best out of him, maybe now more than ever before, where he's got maybe the experience and the football body and now the familiarity kind of all coming together, and you got the quarterback. This whole thing works out with Nick Haley. I mean, this could be a really cool thing. I think it's a lot harder to just say, yeah, we're going to off a guy. But I have been saying that this is a make or break camp for him. And it's not wrong. It's the truth is in the numbers. But tradable, like, what are you going to get for John Mechie? You know, if he has a really cool, like a wow camp, right? If he has a wow camp for the Texans, like, man, this guy's going to be really good. But damn, Christian Kirk looks pretty good too. Jaden Higgins looks pretty good too. Dang, Jalen Noel, man, what a steal this guy looks like.
That's the thing. This is a make-or-break camp for Mechie. It's a make-or-break camp for Hutch. It's a make-or-break camp for Berrios and Watson, because those guys are vets, and they're basically here on one-year deals, and if they're not going to make the team...
They've got returnability, too.
And that's it. You know, Berrios is more returner than receiver.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a guy who spent a lot of time hurt last year. And then Watson is a guy who's like a deep threat receiver. You know, do we look at this roster and say they have a guy who's just a straight deep threat receiver? Because obviously Tank doesn't count because he's hurt.
No. I don't even think about him. Straight up deep threat receiver. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Nico's got that in his arsenal, you know, but they've used him like a lot of different ways.
Right, but Nico's not your old school burner.
No.
Right? Nico's a 4-5 guy who wins because he's physical. He catches everything. His catch radius is enormous. He's really good at high pointing the football. You know, his routes are pristine. Nico is a complete receiver. You know, just a guy who can just flat out outrun the defense and take the top off.
I mean, I would say no. Like, you don't have that one guy that's like known for that. But I don't know, like, Christian Kirk's got a little bit of that in his arsenal, I think. You know, Nico's got a little bit of that. Jaden Higgins certainly has a little bit of that if you watched him from Iowa State.
I think that's probably, like, Justin Watson's calling card is he can be a deep threat. But I also don't know if he's a good enough receiver to just, quote, make the team.
I don't know. He's had a couple of good years.
He's a guy who's been productive on years. Championship teams, and they're looking for him to come in and have some leadership and you know, teach some of these young guys, hey, what it is to be a pro, what it is to, you know, what it takes to be successful in the NFL year in and year out. But Justin Watson's best year was 2 years ago. He had 460 yards and 3 touchdowns. He's a 4th, 5th receiver. Now, he's a guy who's, you know, averaging 17, 21, 13 yards per catch. But he's definitely, you know, a backup receiver. He's not a starting caliber receiver. So is he good enough? And he doesn't have a whole ton of returns. He had 5 punt returns in 2022. So, to me, he's more of a, they want him to play that veteran receiver on the bench, almost like a mentor type role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's won, what, 2 rings in Kansas City. He won a ring in Tampa Bay. I think that they're looking for him to be more of a leader in the clubhouse than they are a leader on the field.
Did he win one in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, one with Tom Brady.
That was the Brady one?
Yeah.
God bless. Time goes by way too fast. That's wild to think about. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, like, you're right. In terms of, like, the returnability, he's done it before, but he's not, like, a regular guy. Like, Braxton Berrios.
Berrios is a returner.
Berrios is, damn, he's been an all-pro return man before.
He was
in his
an all-pro rapport guy for the J-E-S-T.
There you go. Not the first guy that maybe we're surprised by that's a former Jet. Looking at you, Blake Cashman, you know, that's pretty much all he did. That's where he kind of got his name from, you know, because he was never healthy enough to play linebacker when he started his career with them back then. It worked out pretty well from a Texan standpoint. Parlayed that into a really good contract, some money with Minnesota.
J-E-S-T.
But that is right. Like, All right, Justin Watson versus John Mechie. Who are you taking right now?
That's a toss-up right now. No, like, no lie, no nonsense. That is a straight-up toss-up right now. And I would say that if I had to give either one just a slight edge, edge might go to Watson. He's been a better, healthier, more productive receiver.
See, I'd give the edge to Mechie because of familiarity in the system and, you know, with this team. And I think they want him to be that guy for them, too. If you're going Mechie, Watson, Berrios, Hutchinson, like, I think Hutchinson beats Mechie out. I think Berrios beats Mechie out because of the versatility. I think the only real toss-up is between Watson and Mechie, but then by that time, they ain't in the toss. You toss both of them because there are your six receivers
I think
slash
Watson,
return guys.
Watson and Hutch might have the best odds of making the team today. Like I said, I do think they value the leadership and the fact that he's been on three title teams and knows what it takes to be on a title team, and he can bring that work ethic and that knowledge into that room because you got a lot of young guys in that room. And I also think that Hutch's abilities on special teams give him a leg up because they have other guys who can return. Hutch not only return, Hutch is a gunner.
Mm-hmm.
And they like the fact that he's a gunner. And also, even though he hasn't necessarily had a lot of opportunities, he's made some really big plays.
He catches really tough footballs thrown his way. And that's what I was going to say. Like, from the 832 said, you know, come on, guys, Hutchinson's making the team. I'm not saying he's not, but I'm saying, like, from a numbers point of view, and he's very much got to have himself a really good camp. I think he's maybe less under the gun than a guy like John Mechie, less under the gun than maybe a guy like Justin Watson, because you've seen what he can do with this quarterback already. That's kind of the point that I was going to make. It's like, man, you know, talk all the time about C.J. Stroud just being able to throw it up and get it in the vicinity of a Nico Collins, and you feel really good about him coming down with one. I feel pretty good about throwing it, you know, in the vicinity below the knees to Xavier Hutchinson and him coming up with it. Like, now it's the other stuff because I think maybe the routes have been a little bit of a question with him. The route running ability hasn't maybe been what they want it to be, what he wants it to be.
Man,
he makes
teachable.
Some great shoestring catches, man, and some he makes the hard plays, you know?
You can teach guys to run better routes. You can't teach a guy to fight for the football. He wants to fight for it or he doesn't.
Yeah.
And Hutch has more size to him than Mechie does. And I think this team is showing you they like big receivers.
Yeah, well, I like big receivers too. And guys that know how to use their physicality. I think Hutch can definitely be better at that, but I think he can be a guy. So, like I said, if you're going 1v1, Hutch versus Mech, I think Hutch wins. I just don't think it necessarily comes down to that at all, but maybe it does in terms of like the versatility standpoint of view from like a guy in Mechie who's played a combined, I don't know, 20 snaps special teams wise the last 2 years for the Texans.
Texans, Cyclones, receivers.
Versus, you know, Xavier Hutchinson, who, you know, he's a guy, man. He's a guy that's expected to go down there and make a play, you know, as a gunner. And he's a guy that has made plays offensively for the Texans. Maybe save their bacon in one of their last games.
Look, that playoff game against the Chargers.
Is that an impossible, was it, third and
that scramble
forever?
Play where CJ loses the football, picks it up, looks downfield, finds Hutch.
Yeah.
Man, scramble play. We see guys who are really good receivers not be good at scramble play.
Mm-hmm.
And Nico is phenomenal on scramble play. Hutch is really good on scramble play.
He was that day. Yeah, ain't no doubt. Patrick Creighton, Sean Bajani, Chris Santiago, we're Area 45. Coming up next, we'll get to the Rockets and Reed Shepard. Why they made Shepard untouchable this offseason and more. That's next.
Stop it, Reed Shepard.
Sports Radio 610 presents Area 45 with Bajani and Creighton.
All right. Before we get to a little Rocket audio from Reed Sheppard and company, we have a job to do, H-Town. We have to jinx the Seattle Mariners, who are currently...
The Seattle Coffee Sippers.
No hitting the New York Yankees. The Mariners lead 5-0 with play in the bottom of the eighth. And Brian Wu has gone 7 innings of no hit ball. He's walked 2, struck out 5. He's thrown 95 pitches thus far tonight. This game is in New York, so I don't believe he's back out on the mound because he's thrown 95 pitches. But somebody's got to be coming out of the Mariner bullpen. If not now, then at some point. If there is to be a no-hitter tonight thrown by the Seattle Mariners, it's going to have to be a combined effort, I think, at some point in time.
He's still out there.
He's still out there, yes, throwing a no-hitter. He's throwing a no-hitter.
Repeat that one more time.
A no-hitter.
No-hitter.
No-hitter. He's throwing a no-hitter. Not a perfect game, but he's throwing a no-hitter.
Why do you guys want to, like, break this up?
Because we don't like the coffee sippers that hail from Seattle.
And we like the South Bronx slumlords.
No, but, you know, you can get the best of both worlds. Do you really want maybe the greatest catcher since Johnny Bench and Cal Raleigh, Big Dumper, who has gone 0-3 tonight to catch a no-hitter? I do not, sir. Because then an already insufferable and annoying Ocho on the text line is going to be even more annoying and insufferable on the text line with the Cal Raleigh updates.
Don't really care.
Just joking, Ocho.
The coffee sippers are in my rearview mirror.
They are in the Astros' rearview mirror by 6.5 games.
They're looking at my big dumper.
They're looking at a lot of people's big dumpers. I didn't mean to be mean, but I meant to be mean. We'll see what happens. We'll keep you updated on that.
And yes,
no hitter.
I absolutely love when the slumlords get embarrassed.
Success! Brian Wu has yielded a hit. All right, so
you're Yankees, a despicable person.
Yankees, presumed to lose your ass. Brian Wu, we'll be seeing you. He'll be getting pulled here in the next 2 seconds, I would imagine.
You're despicable.
Thank you. Thank you. The jinx is real, people. The jinx is real. Works on the Astros. Works on the Seattle Coffee.
The Area 45 jinx is real.
Yeah.
It sure is. We've witnessed it a lot.
Yeah, we have. We have. You know, I thought I exercised those demons, but no, I just ended up transferring them to PC. He's taken over those duties more of late. I'm sorry that I missed this text. This text wins the month, in my opinion. It came in about 20-some minutes
ago. The one that says someone call the FCC on Sean?
No. Where's that one? I missed that one, too.
That one's on the tube.
Oh, it's on the tube? What did I do? I don't think I said anything inappropriate this evening.
You jinxed the coffee sippers when they could have mega embarrassed the slumlords.
So you got to call the FCC on me?
Yep.
No, this one's from a 346 number. It says, they got a friend who's a Latino medical consultant for the Astros. And according to this person, he said, Jake is going to need a Tommy Juan procedure on his calf. Hey, who's the producer that produced our show when you co-hosted with me?
Joe
Esquivel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is a very Joe Esquivel
joke. That is.
I would not be saying, do you know Joe's number? Does it begin with 346?
I actually have his number, so let me check.
Check. Check the number. That sounded very much like a Joe Esquivel joke in there. 713-572-4610, 572-4610. Tony weighs in on the text line. I believe this gentleman is throwing a no-hitter, or what we call a no-no. Is he throwing a no-hitter in the seventh? I think someone should make him aware. Good job, Tony. That's my guy right there. He gets it.
I was perfectly content to let the slumlords get no-hit.
Is Brian Wu a former Met? Was he once drafted by the Mets? The Mets look at him at
who
one point
was
in time?
Higher on your hate board, the slumlords or the coffee sippers?
Higher on my hate board? The coffee sippers weren't even on my hate board.
So then why are you rooting for the slumlords against the coffee sippers?
I'm not. I'm rooting against a perfectly fine fellowed individual named Brian Wu.
Woo! Well, you're a bad person.
Maybe. You won't get many arguments from the good people out there listening, I don't think.
Everyone in Seattle is about to call our show and say, why are you a jinx, Bijani?
Because you suck. That's why. All right, so Reed Sheppard playing on the Rockets Summer League team. He sat down with, you remember Udonis Haslam, former NBA big man.
So, is it he still playing for the Heat?
Not playing for the Heat. Not in search of another ring. But Reed Sheppard is. Udonis Haslam asked Reed Sheppard a pretty good question, and I think Reed's answer was even better than the question.
What are you looking to add to that team? That if it's a night where it's not your night, it's Kevin's night, it's Van Fleet night, it's this guy's night, what are you looking to add to make sure, hey, I'm still in rotation, I'm still going to help us win this basketball game, and I'm going to prove that to the coaching staff?
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest thing this summer was getting in the weight room and defensively, just working on defense. Like, we had probably a 2 to 3 week stretch. I was just, my workouts were straight defense. Like,
I love that.
I wasn't touching the basketball the first 40 minutes. It wasn't very fun, but, you know, some things, we got it done. So, like, just working on that stuff, you know, still getting up shots and ball handling and all that, but really just working on being stronger and getting more physical.
Love that from Reed Sheppard. Not even touching the basketball, man. Just working on straight D. You know what I also love is Reed Sheppard and everybody else that has asked about their offseason so far acts like their offseason's been going on for like 2 months. It feels like the offseason in the NBA has been about 2.5 weeks. Reed Sheppard putting in that work, man. That's been one of the questions. What do you expect from a guy who the Rockets deemed untouchable this offseason in their dealing for Kevin Durant or anybody? They said, no, you want Reed Sheppard? We're not talking to you people anymore.
All right? How about new?
Come at us with somebody else. How about Jabari Smith? They said, no.
How about
new? Come at us for somebody else. Jalen Green? Yeah, sure. Would you like some brand new basketballs? Dylan Brooks? Yes, absolutely. We need to get rid of cap space. So
I'm
please.
Hip. I'm cool. I'm with it.
We want 5 draft picks. And the Rockets said, you'll take 5 2s and like it, bitches. And the Phoenix Sun says, oh, yes, of course. Thank you. May we have another. And it's worked out great so far for the Rockets. But the untouchable thing, Shams Charania, who is been all over every bit of NBA news for the last, I don't know, it seems like forever, certainly the last 2 years since Woj called it quits, sat down with Reed Sheppard and asked him what it meant to Reed for them to make him an untouchable player this offseason.
This offseason, teams inquire with the Rockets, ask about you. The Suns, I was told, asked about you. You were made untouchable in those conversations. So what do you feel when you hear that? What kind of motivation does it give you? How do you feel just about where you stand right now?
Yeah, I think it's really cool. You know, for me, this is my first year dealing with all the offseason, the trades. So it's kind of crazy seeing all of it go down. But like you said, hearing some of that stuff is pretty cool. It gives me a lot of confidence just going into the gym, continue to work on everything I've been working on this summer, just getting better and just really looking forward to the season and trying to help as much way as I can.
Think Reed Sheppard was ever really worried about getting dealt by the Rockets? Ever?
How about now?
Like somebody that they took 3 overall, like what little they had to see from him in college. They already knew he's a badass shooter.
They literally took him with the 3rd overall pick. They, yeah. They love the fact that the guy can shoot the way he shoots. And what was the thing the Rockets couldn't do last year? Yeah, they were never trading him. Same as they weren't trading Jabari Smith, another big stretch 4. They weren't trading him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. But it's got to be really cool for, you know, all of that to be out there. Like, that's the narrative around you, is like they are not trading this guy. They love this guy, and it's got to make you feel awesome. Dude's putting in the work, man. I thought, you know, going back to that first cut when he was talking about just, you know, dude, for first 40 minutes of workouts for 2 or 3 weeks, he's just balling on defense, not even touching the basketball. Now, he doesn't necessarily like that, but he understands the work that he needs to put in. That should tell you something. He said defense, that was clear. And then 2, he's got to have an NBA body for coming into the 25-26 season for the Rockets. Had to put on some weight, had to put on some muscle. And all I could think of is hearing that from him is, why the hell could we not ever just get that? Have that be the end result from Cam Whitmore. You know, I don't get it. But again, that is a 3rd overall pick speaking, and Reed Sheppard, who comes from like basketball country, is a former Wildcat out of Kentucky, to, you know, Cam Whitmore, who for, you know, 20, 21 years old, whatever he's going to be now, later on this year, just, you know, has not been able to just have it click and look, get that yet.
I think it goes to something that our old buddy Basketball Spo had said last week. There's a reason why Cam Whitmore fell in the draft as far as he did. And then there's a reason why when it was time to trade him, nobody offered a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's got nothing to do with his talent.
No, it's the immaturity, which is wild to me. I don't understand it. It's just, it's one of those things that just boggles the mind. You don't, and maybe there was, at the end of the day, nothing he could have done about the situation by the time the Rockets, you know, were really serious about Kevin Durant and they got him here. Like, his bed was probably already made. And I think that was probably closer to the case. It's probably been made for a good, I don't know, 4 to 6 months. And the lack of playing time is probably evidence of that. 713-572-4610. More good Rocket stuff coming up later on in the show. But next, we've got hot leads. We'll get you caught up on the day's top stories. Stay put.
These are the new leads.
Now, look, I need the leads.
These are the Glengarry leads.
Two lead cards for tonight, two lead cards for tomorrow.
Why give him the good leads?
He's got the leads.
He's got the leads.
He's got the good leads.
The whole thing is the leads.
They stole the Glengarry leads.
Let's talk about something important. Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
All right, time for hot leads. Astros are off tonight, back in action tomorrow against the Rangers. Here is your pitching matchups for the three-game series that'll take you into the All-Star break. You've got Lance McCullers Jr. on the mound tomorrow against Jack Leiter. Framber Valdez against Jacob deGrom on Saturday. Go make sure you find Chris Santiago at the game. He will be unmistakable on Saturday.
I'll actually be wearing a cowboy hat, so feel free to find me.
What in the hell? Oh, like an actual...
Yeah, an actual cowboy.
I don't know why I thought like a Dallas Cowboys
hat. You said cowboy, not cowboys.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Do you own an Astros jersey?
I do, actually. Yeah, but my girlfriend would probably be wearing that.
Okay. All right. Chris will have, like, the best mustache in the building. Easily recognizable. Cowboy hat, badass mustache, girlfriend wearing the Astros jersey. He'll be sitting in the big baller seats. Go say hi to Chris. He'll buy you a beer. And then you can feel really good about yourself on a Saturday afternoon at the ballpark. That'll be great. Hunter Brown, Nathan Eovaldi on the... Sunday game, the series finale against the Astros. There's some really damn good matchups, man. The Mariners, they're going to win a baseball game tonight. Maybe, because the jinx, it's real and it's alive, and the New York Yankees are coming back. This game is in the top of the ninth, and the Mariners, who once upon a time ago led 5-0 in the eighth inning, now only lead 5-3. With nobody on and one out, as the coffee sippers are batting. The Yankees will have, they'll be down to their final three outs and see if they can complete the comeback in the bottom of the ninth.
That'll way to fun. Go, Douchepotamus.
Brian Wu had a no-hitter going through seven, and I said no-hitter, and then he all of a sudden stopped throwing one. So that was pretty cool. They left him in there to give up another hit, in which he ended up giving up two earned runs. My guess is that it was a dinger that was hit, but looks like it was. Maybe Stanton. Is that a Stantonian home run to center field? 415 feet. Nevertheless, Mariners lead 5-3 over the Yankees. If they win, they'll be within six games of your Astros in the American League West. The Astros lead Toronto by one game for the second best record in the American League, coming into play tonight, and trail Detroit, the Meows, by 3.5 for the top spot. The top story, though, not the Astros at all, but it is one Bryce Aloysius Matthews that hails from Atascocita High School. They are the Eagles, and now he is an official Astro. He is no longer a space cowboy. Bryce Matthews has been called up. He's their number one prospect. He'll join the team tomorrow. Matthews balling, hitting .283 on the season, 10 dingers, 39 ribs, 25 steals. He is badass. He was slated to play in the Futures game. My guess now that the Astros have called him up is that is thwarted, right? He can no longer play in the Futures game.
Yeah, I think he's no longer in the Futures game.
Yeah, I'm sure he's not sad about that situation at all.
Gee, oh no, I have to play in the majors.
The bigs. I want to see the
video.
Get
a real salary and a real per diem.
I hope they did a video. Like, I hope they did like a really cool thing, you know, to like announce that he was getting called up. I love those videos, man. They're really, really fun to watch. Other baseball news, the Yankees, Clark Schmidt, the latest to need Tommy John surgery. That was announced earlier today by them. You know, Garrett Cole had to get it back in March for the Yankees. For Clark, this is the second time in his career that he'll need Tommy John. He's 29. He also had to have it back in 2017, so it's been a minute. But it got me thinking, PC, updated numbers on Tommy John surgeries in the year of our Lord 2025. I've got them for you if you were interested at all.
I am, because I am a firm believer that the last couple of years, these TJ injuries have gone up, up, and up.
So here's what I did. There was kind of a method to my madness, right? I just looked at April 1st to today, and I looked all the way back to 2022. Okay, so essentially the start of the season to date over the last four seasons. That's the numbers that I have, and if you want more, I can get them for you, because somebody is very kind to make a live Google Doc accessible to everyone in the world that you can very easily find by Googling Tommy John surgery stats. And so if you need more info, I have it for you. But in 2022, from April 1st to July 10th, 35 Tommy John surgeries were necessary all across all levels of pro baseball. That is high rookie ball to the major leagues. 2023, same period, 36. 2024, same period, 37. This year, 2025, same period, April 1st to July 10th, 24, and that is including Clark Schmidt. So the numbers significantly down this season in respect to that time period over the last 4 years.
Yeah, and it seems like every time we turn around, there's another pitcher hitting with an elbow injury.
Yeah. Now, the numbers really for the year of our Lord 2025, going all the way back to January 1st, there's 41 players.
So there you go. It's the guys who were diagnosed in the offseason coming off of last year. Because it definitely seems like those Tommy Johns are up.
Correction, 38, because three of those individuals out of the 41 were two college and one high school player.
Okay.
So the correct number is 38 players.
That's up a little bit.
Across all pro levels of baseball since January 1st. So there you go.
It's definitely up on higher profile players.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like, I mean, Astros can attest to that, unfortunately, this season. There you go. Next up on Hot Leads, the Lakers and Mavs Summer League action. Watch. No, I'm just joking. We're not doing that. The Thunder and Jalen Williams agreed to a rookie max deal today. 5 years, a max rookie contract extension for Jalen Williams, who could see $287 million in the life of this contract. This guy, I don't know if you're aware, NBA history in the NBA Finals for Jalen Williams. This dude had a hell of a finals, man. He scored 17, 19, 26, 27, 40 points, becoming the first player to increase his scoring output in each of the first five career finals games all time when recording at least 15 points in each game. That's wild. That is wild. Fantastic. The Thunder now have long-term commitments from their big three of SGA, who's 26 and has gotten, is it 4 years or 5 years at 285? I can't remember.
It's 5 years.
5 years at 285?
Supermax is 5 years.
Then you got Williams, who's 24. He gets the 5 year, 287. They just signed Chet Holmgren to 5 years, $250 million. This is wild to me. This is almost $900 million potentially in total earnings for all three of these players aging from 23 to 26, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Money is just money. You got to play, you got to perform. But do these three guys on the Oklahoma City Thunder intimidate you at all in this potential 1 to 3 year championship window that the Rockets are trying to build with Kevin Durant?
Nope.
Nope. What about you, C?
Do they scare me? I mean, not really. I mean, they just won, but they are a beatable team. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you can beat this team. So it doesn't scare me that much. And also, how long is this going to last? That's another question mark. I mean, we saw what's going on with the Celtics. They had to tear it down. How long is this going to last? How long are they going to keep this big three together, I guess?
Well, I don't know how long you can afford.
That exactly.
You're like, what are you going to put around them?
Mm-hmm.
This is wild to me. Like, the reason why I ask is people are going to say the same thing, I think, in large part, especially Rocket fans. It's like, you got Kevin Durant, you know, and we're young, too, and you got some really up-and-coming players. Yeah. Okay. These guys have won a championship now. They've got championship pedigree. When it's convenient, we talk about how you have the championship pedigree. When it's not convenient for you, you talk about like, oh, well, how are they going to be able to afford to keep these guys together? An organization like the Oklahoma City Thunder, who once upon a time ago decided to not do this very thing with Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and James Harden, is now doing this. I don't know if it's smart. I don't know if it's dumb. I don't know what their numbers say. If they're anticipating like the cap numbers just going up astronomically over the course of the next decade, but it's not my money. I just know that these three dudes and that team are really freaking good right now.
And then another thing to add on to just kind of that is I believe they have like 13 or 14 first round picks in like the next like 7 years or something like that. So that's another thing that I feel like kind of helps them, because they don't have to, I guess, pay other guys. They just have to make sure they scout right and make sure that they actually hit on these draft picks.
Yeah,
well, which, if we're being honest, it's hard to do in the NBA.
I know, but they've been doing pretty good.
And they have been.
Like, rewind like 3 years ago, and it's like you ask all of these guys the questions, or the Thunder front office, like, hey, all of these guys are going to be worth $250 million in 4 years' time. Believe it or not.
They'd all probably say no.
Yeah, they're a bit like, well, you know, maybe never him. Know what the market's going to do. We think they're going to be really good players for us, but holy smokes, you kidding me? Final up on Hot Leads, Wimbledon update. One final is set. The women's final is set for Saturday. It was world number 12, Amanda Anisimova. She's an American. Tip the cap to her. She upset top seed Aryna Sabalenka in three sets today. Anisimova's 23 years old. I thought she was a little bit older for somebody that took 6 or 8 months off for a mental health check a couple of years ago when things were going really good for her. They weren't going this good, though. She's going to play number 4, Iga Swiatek, in the final on Saturday. The last time an American woman won Wimbledon was when Serena Williams emerged victorious back in 2016. Do we have audio from her clinching today, Chris? Let's see how it sounded.
Again, seven match. Amazing, Amanda. Emotional.
4 sets to 1. 6-4, 4-6, 6-4.
Man.
And the top seed beaten. An American in the Wimbledon final for the first time since Serena 6 years ago.
That's awesome. Really cool stuff. Looking forward to that match on Saturday. Anisimova and Swiatek, a number 12 against the number 4 in the women's final. Taylor Fritz and Carlos Alcaraz, they'll do battle tomorrow at 7:30 in the morning. I know what I'll be doing. And then Italy's Jannik Sinner and the one, the only, Novak Djokovic will do battle following that match, slated now for 9:30. On the final for the men will be on Sunday. Going to be locked into that. I don't know about UPC, but I have discovered that Chris is a bigger tennis fan than I knew. I thought I was the only one of those around here in these parts, but
it's me, and then also Figgy. Figgy's really big on tennis.
Oh, Figgy is?
Yeah. Figgy's really big. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I found out like when I first started, like he had tennis on, and I was just like, "Oh, you're into tennis?" He's like, "Heck yeah!"
All right, I'm be honest. Like, cool. Are you going for the Americans? Or is it just like Alcaraz or bust for you?
I'm going for the women's, of course. Yes, I'm going for the Americans. For the men's, I'm going Alcaraz or bust.
Alcaraz, you know, I hate it, but I am too. I just like that dude. He's only like 23 as well.
Yeah, he's 23. He's He's so damn good.
I don't know why I feel like he should be older. Like, I feel he's been, well, you know, tennis, they get started really young. It feels like he should be like 30.
I mean, he's, you know, everything he's done, I guess.
I know.
That's probably why.
It's wild, man. It's wild. All right, that's going to do it for Hot Leads. Coming up next, 9 o'clock hour, get back to a little football in lists. I forgot to get to this last night. We got we had a squirrel moment, but we'll get to Bill Barnwell's ranking. He did all 32 teams in the receiver, tight end, and running back groups. Where do the Texans fit in? We'll discuss next.